Wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake, this is our last regular show of the year. We have the Christmas special to come.
But well, let's hope so.
We'll get back to that at a later time. But this is our last regular show of the year, so we're going to do some pop culture. We're going to talk about the big movie event that's coming. And
that's
we're
right. also going to talk sort of a Christmas present to everybody.
Yes, and then we're also going to talk about the big TV event that just finished. In both instances, we will warn you up front that there could be spoilers. You're on your own after.
Well, we don't have any spoilers for the big...
No, it's actually true. We don't have any spoilers for the movie because the movie's not come out yet, so how can we ruin it for you? Right. But the TV show, Westworld, which is just finished, we might drop some spoilers in there.
Yep.
But if it makes you feel any better, it won't be on purpose.
Any prefatory notes? We're dressed in our... you've got a tie on. I've got my business casual work attire on because we're coming. This is a weekday one, although it doesn't involve beer, unlikely.
Well, it doesn't involve beer because I was at the dentist yesterday having my gap filled. I lost a tooth this summer.
Mind the gap.
Yes, I lost a tooth this summer.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm now in the act of having it replaced. And it's actually, I thought they just sort of made another one and stuck it in there. But it's actually quite a long
process.
They put
a post in there, don't they?
Well, first of all, they have to put a gum implant bone thing in. Mm-hmm. That has to sit in your mouth for about 6 weeks to see if your body accepts it. That's the words my dental surgeon used, that, you know, see if it takes. A bit like having like a new heart or something. And then at that moment, once it's sort of solid in there, then I went back this week to have him drill in, as you say, the post.
Yeah, so mostly it's because the dentist is having a new deck put on their house and they have to pay in installments. So if they can stretch your payments out concurrently, it lines up very nicely with the amounts they have to pay their contractor.
And you know something? If the guy needs more cash, what better thing to do than get in some English guy?
Like, ooh, I got a cash cow. You know, he goes to his buddy, goes, I think we may be putting outdoor heating system, you know, just now.
You get a
hot tub. It's going to be a hot tub.
You get a British guy in? Oh, they're all, you can mine them for all kinds of cash.
Literally.
That's my bad American accent.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's get started. You've already bought your tickets for Rogue One, which comes out December the 16th. For those of you that don't know, it's in the Star Wars family, but it's not directly related. It doesn't have any of the Star Wars people.
The phrasing they're calling it's a Star Wars anthology, part of the Star Wars anthology series. And so we've talked about this before, but, you know, maybe
not. You want to play the trailer first and then we can...
Let me just prefatory note of plot-wise where it fits is...
It is before those first three movies that were great, but it's after those other three movies that sucked and therefore all before the very last movie that was great.
Right.
Copyright Atlantic Voice.
Well, the copyright's getting more and more complicated.
Whoa,
it's literally immediately before.
I'm still amazed I could.
Immediately
pull that off.
Before the original.
Yes.
That we've, you know, the 1971, because it's about the folks who stole the plants, the Death Star. And so, in fact, this kind of gets to one of the things, but.
Well, I'm going to drop a spoiler in right here. This is going to be the first Star Wars movie where they don't blow up the Death Star at the end because it's not been built yet.
Yeah, right.
Boom.
But yeah. I didn't realize, guess in the bad movies that were prequels, there was a scene, I don't remember it, I saw a picture of it, where like there's a skeleton of the Death Star.
Ooh, I don't know that. I remember the robot, the blooping robot and the princess, and she's hidden it in there. And then I remember them pulling up those really nasty late 70s green computer graphics that you think are really cool at the
meaning,
time.
Not the original. This is like in chapter 3 of the movies, the last of the bad ones.
Okay.
So the most recent.
Yes, where Darth Vader, where he becomes a man. Where he becomes Darth
Vader. They show
them
on the deck, I think, looking out at this thing that's half built. Because apparently the building of somebody's got an article that says there's a book out. Like, if you're really into this stuff, I can't remember the book, but it gives you a whole lead into this, explaining the building of the Death Star.
Isn't that Star Wars Rebels?
No, that's the cartoon thing.
I act like I don't know what I'm talking about when it comes to Star Wars.
But so in theory, the idea is this is the folks stealing the plans, but the the thing's been built because we're about to embark on the original Star Wars.
Oh.
So at the end, you know, so one of the things I thought you were
about spoiler actually isn't a spoiler because the Death Star could blow up at the end of this one and then get rebuilt to get blown up in the next one.
Probably not.
Okay.
But so this is one of the things is I'm scattered around. Well, no, well, because what I want to talk is about the crawl. So the beginning of the first movie in the crawl, meaning that's the credits that scroll off the screen. Not credits. It's like an explanation.
Yeah.
And it says that the rebels have staged a battle. And during the battle, the purpose of the battle was to allow the spies to get in there and steal it. Essentially, the battle was a distraction.
Oh.
For the spies to go and get these plans. And so now somebody, apparently 10 years ago, they came up with this idea. Somebody must have looked at it and said, that's the story we want to hear, is the story about the spies and them getting the plans. In the movie, they don't appear to be spies, per se. I don't know. But in any event, they're a group that's going to go and steal the plans. It's supposed to be, a bunch of people said it's almost more like a war movie.
Yeah.
Because it's just a big battle type of thing. Although
there's Star Wars elements. But it's sort of like a Dirty Dozen-ish special mission war movie.
Right. So yeah. we'll roll the trailer here a la our summer movie. Oh, I put the wrong slider. All right, there we go. That could have been harsh. This was the first trailer.
It's coming undone.
That's a funny accent.
Imperial flags rain.
This is across the galaxy. What's his name? Forrest Whitaker.
Forrest Whitaker.
Can you be trusted without your shackles?
Let's just get this over with, shall we?
A mission for
you. She's in the original, or somebody like her. Mon Mothma.
A major weapons test is imminent. We need to know how to destroy it.
If you're really doing this, I want to help.
Good.
Good. I've been recruiting for the rebellion for a long time.
We destroyed our home.
I fight the Empire now.
I fear nothing. All is as the Force wills it.
So this one definitely looks very war movie-ish, right?
It does, then it feels that way, innit? So Magnificent Seven, getting the gang together.
Remind me to talk about him.
Okay.
There isn't much time.
And that voice you're hearing is the heroine, Felicity Jones.
Grow stronger.
Chance of failure.
He means well.
This is our chance to make a real difference.
Visually looks very cool. Yeah.
Are you with me?
All the way.
All right. Rogue One, Star Wars story. Now,
got to catch that little Darth Vader breathing at the end there, because there'll be a little overlap. It's not going to be revolving around him. They also show a scene in one of the trailers where Princess Leia's adoptive father is in this shot. Like, it's when all the rebels are doing this planning. Jimmy Smits, who played Leia's father in the first movie, when the baby gets dropped off.
Oh, that's right. I forget.
And so he appears in this as just a part of the crew, I guess, that are part of the planning here. So give me a moment while I pull up the IMDb page so I can make sure I get the names right. But the main
Which
stars,
names do you want? Felicity, I've got it here. Don't forget IMDb. So I've got Wikipedia. Felicity Jones is your star, and she beat out both Maras, Roonies, whatever they are, Rooney, Mara.
Is that right?
Okay, yeah, she beat out both of them for the part. So if you don't know who Felicity Jones is, she's one of those English girls. She's always like the tragic girlfriend, or the girlfriend of tragic. Well, like, she was Stephen Hawking's wife.
I think it's because of her name.
She was someone else's
girlfriend. I thought I knew more about her.
No, she's been in a couple of things.
I think it's because her name's Felicity, and it just sounds like another band of women actors.
No, I know what you're saying.
Who are in that age bracket.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you.
And then I went looking it up, and I'm like, well, wait a minute, I don't know
who this
person
is. She's the only Felicity.
Well, it's Felicity Huffman, but she's obviously age bracket.
So Felicity Jones is your star. Diego Luna, I don't know who that is. he's in it, or she. Donnie Yen, Mans Mikkelsen, Alan Tudyk,
well,
Yang
you,
Wen,
you have,
Forrest
to, you have to stop at Mikkelsen a second. Because
well, no, I'm
going to
come
guys.
Back to these. And okay. Ben Mendelsohn, who was in one of the Batman movies and was also in a terrific Australian film called Animal Kingdom, which has been spun off into a TV series on TNT.
Okay.
But he's not in it. So that's your cast, basically.
Did you mention Alan Tudyk?
Alan Tudyk, and
Riz Ahmed?
No, Riz Ahmed was not here on the front page of my Wikipedia page, but he is mentioned later. Additionally, Riz Ahmed plays Bodhi Rook, a former Imperial pilot with strong piloting and technical skills, now working with the Rebel Squad.
And if people don't know who Riz Ahmed is, he was the star of the series on HBO, The Night Of, this summer, the crime story, and he was very, very good at
remake
that.
Of the British miniseries, The Night Of. Yes,
and he's a British person. Yeah. Most of these actors are British, actually.
Yeah,
he's of a Pakistani descent, and he's also a rapper.
Yeah. Oh, he is?
Yeah.
That knew he was familiar. I kept getting him confused with the comedian. What's his name?
Amit Azaris.
No, not Donald Glover.
Aziz Ansari?
Aziz Ansari.
Okay.
I don't know,
think
terrible.
He's a rapper.
No, but they both have A names. Yeah, so there you go. That's what confused me. So, yeah, this is your crew. And I want to say something up front, which I might circle.
I want to talk about Alan Tudyk.
I might circle back to it later. I wouldn't sit here and attempt to tell you that this is an A-list cast. I think someone said the cast is an A-list, it's just credible.
Right.
And I can't remember where I saw that quote. That may be in the other article that we're going to talk about. It's a very multinational cast. And what I say by that is, it's clear here.
Multi-ethnic, anyway.
Multi-ethnic.
Maybe not multinational.
No, I think
British,
so. Because if I don't know where some of these people are from, then there are people in the world who do know where they're from, and we want their movie-going money. And I don't mean to be cynical when I say that, but this isn't some California Hollywood star cast. This is a cast of people who may be unknown to many of us. Because, like I said, I don't know who Diego Luna is. I don't know who Donnie Yen is. I don't know who Jiang Wen is. But I guarantee, in their home markets, those guys are big stars.
Well, Diego Luna is born in Mexico City. So a lot of his stuff was Mexican stuff beforehand.
Go.
But he's a producer of Cesar Chavez. Let's see. No, it's not much here. But I don't think that's really why. I mean, I think they're really intending to appeal to an American audience who's going to embrace the multi-ethnicity of it and a diversity of the cast. I think, you know, they've been faulted for, I don't know them, but a lot of movies been faulted for these sort of adventure movies that are supposed to be in space and yet everybody's white kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, sure, you got crazy looking creatures, but why don't you have like different looking people?
That's true.
And so I think they've gone through a lot of efforts to do that and be more active.
And one thing I will say for this too, this is now, obviously because this is, as you touched on at the start, this is now an anthology film. But in terms of the new re-Disney-fied Star Wars universe, this is the second major release. It is the second one where the lead is a female. So to your point there about, you know, not being, the space isn't full of white guys.
The next one's going to be a female lead. We know the next one after that will not be a female lead because the next one after that is the Han Solo prequel.
Okay. But still, what I'm saying is that the first two releases since Disney has taken over, there's been no hesitancy about, ooh, we can't get Brad Pitt, then can we get someone else? Nope, we're going with... I think it's fair to say Felicity Jones is an English actress who has caused some confusion as to who she is. The last one, what's her name in the Star Wars, who was very good. I didn't know who she was until she was on that.
Yeah, no.
So we've gone with an unknown and a
nearly unknown
and a known confusing.
Right.
Which
so
somehow in there is a.
I mean, I'm sure there's a cost element. I think they're also trying to catch, particularly the young actors and actresses, they're catching them on an upswing.
I mean,
so I think everybody has. This is not like
that's a very fair point.
The original movies where you're like those people were not really great, other than maybe other than Harrison Ford, but mostly they were serviceable actors. Whereas in this case, I think there's a lot more talent because you now have the engine of Disney behind finding it all.
Well,
we're going to get totally caught up in these actors forever. But
sure.
Alan Tudyk plays K2SO,
okay.
Which is the robot that we hear who sounds a little bit like C-3PO, except he's a much more
intelligent,
violent version,
less annoying.
Like, well, because he's like a security droid that was with the Imperial forces and has been wiped into this job. And so, like, one of the reviews was saying, well, it's great because he does all these things where he's sort of a, they think he's going to steal the movie basically, because he's got all these little comic lines, but meanwhile he also shoots up people. It's not like C-3PO, where he's just shuffling around like with his.
Yeah, and I do want to say this about C-3PO. Out of all the areas where you have a British/English sidekick, C-3PO is clearly the most annoying. And I'm going to put myself in that list. He's even more annoying than I am.
Yeah. But Alan Tudyk is best known to me anyway for being in 28 Days with
zombies?
No, not that one. That's 28 Days Later. 28 Days with Sandra Bullock.
Sandra Bullock.
When they're in the
rehab
facility.
Who's she in?
And he has this weird affectation accent. It's kind of peculiar.
Who is the male lead in that? Is that?
It's not like a.
Is it single Ryan one. Reynolds or Hugh Grant?
Oh, no.
Or Leon?
What, no.
Is that a Sandra Bullock?
Viggo Mortensen or whatever his name
is. It is. I've never seen 28 Days.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, but it's a. No, it's a type of movie that doesn't get made anymore. Yes. Put it that way. But you're skipping over somebody who should be your favorite, Mads Mikkelsen.
Mads Mikkelsen, of course, he was TV's Hannibal Lecter, and of course, prior to that, he was the villain in James Bond.
Yeah, really? Come on, yes, now you're like dodging around the James Bond thing. He's the one who smashes James Bond in the groin repeatedly until some guy comes and knocks him off.
Yes,
sorry, spoiler for anybody who hasn't seen that already. That guy's going to get killed.
Spoilers aplenty in this show. And of course, Forrest Whitaker giving a sort of a sheen of Oscar-winning, you know, gravitas.
Although, like, just to that beginning there, I don't know what that accent's supposed to be. Is it some sort of like out of space accent? It didn't seem to like be any country.
I don't care. It's Forrest Whitaker.
American, right?
Is he
American?
I think Forrest Whitaker is great. Yeah. Full stop. He can do whatever he likes.
No, he's going to be great.
Yeah.
So you got all these people. Then let's talk about, actually, this all segue into the article, which led us to having this conversation. I've lost my page of paper that explains
who's right
the director.
Here.
So Gareth Edwards is the director, directed the most recent Godzilla and a movie called Monsters, which is not Monsters, Inc., but rather a
more. And not Monster Singular with Charlize Theron.
Writer was Tony Gilroy and Chris Weitz.
But
that was pretty brief. There was another guy who was I don't have him written down here, but there's another guy who was the writer. So Tony Gilroy, though, best known for, he wrote all four of the Bourne movies.
Yep.
He wrote Michael Clayton and also directed that.
I mean, yeah.
So he's got...
And there was I think it was Duplicity with Clive Owen and Julia Roberts.
That's
which
right.
Is sort of like an industrial espionage romantic comedy.
So... the first guy directs it. We get this guy doing the writing, but then Gilroy is brought in to do reshoots. And then one of the things that was in the paper recently, I mean, not apart from, I don't know if it's mentioned in the article, this Guardian article, but but talks about what he got paid, which led a bunch of people to go, oh my, because apparently when he came in to do reshoots, it was publicized that he was getting $200,000 a week to do reshoots. Now, I don't think that means him personally. I think that means whatever his company, because he's. I think I'm sure it's, you know, like not just paying him.
Okay.
Could be wrong. $200,000 a week. And then it recently came out that, I don't know, they're making these disclosures, like their stock disclosures or something like that. He got paid $5 million.
Yeah.
And somebody was like, that's a half a year of reshoots. I mean, 25 weeks of reshoots, if it's really $200,000 a week. And so everybody's like, that's a tremendous... And reshoots, of course, for anybody who's not into the movie thing, is you film the whole thing and you realize...
You got some bits.
You got some problems here, missing pieces, or things we want to redo or want to change around the plot, so we've reshoots. And we talked before about how the most recent Star Wars movie was known to have that. Like, it reshoots to the point where some of their trailers, their early sneak previews... were not accurate anymore.
Well, apparently this Guardian article mentioned that I think it's Marvel factor into budget, both the financial budget and the time budget, a month of reshoots.
Right.
I think there's almost a sense now that the movie gets hacked. It sort of gets patched together. It's tested. And the understanding is that, it's unrealistic to think that whatever you first put in front of them is going to go down well. So people now say in advance, yep, we're factoring in the tidy up time.
Yeah, and
which was not the case 10 years ago.
Right, no. Once upon a time, it was thought,
you do this art,
if you're doing that, it means the thing is falling apart. And it could have meant it's falling apart, right? But I think this is much more the case of the Disney engine knows what works. They go, okay, thanks very much. Don't mind what you did there. We're going to make it better. And we're going to go back and we're going to make this more appealing to people. We're going to make tweaks and stuff like that.
Well, I've heard different versions of that. And I think it depends on, you know, the eye sees what the eye wants to see. I've obviously heard the story that Tony Gilroy came in because they weren't happy with the ending and they weren't happy what Gareth Edwards had sort of first put together. Gilroy had worked with Gareth Edwards in a similar role with Godzilla. So Gilroy was brought in to rework the end.
I wonder if Edwards, if that bothers Edwards or if he's like, no, it's awesome. I still get the credit.
Well,
I still get paid. People still say I'm a director of the movie.
Well, I'd also heard a rumor, too, that Gilroy had come in to Disney-fy the movie. And that apparently, and this was what I found was more interesting. Edwards' first cut was war movie, quite hard. Hardcore is the wrong word, but it didn't have that sheen of...
I don't think Disney-fy. I think you mean Star Wars-ify.
Star Wars-ify.
Right, it's not supposed to be like a cutesy animated thing, but I think, you know, the Star Wars movies, for all their action, had an undercurrent of humor.
It's not going to be Alien with Ridley Scott.
Right.
You know what I mean? It is family-friendly. So I heard those two things. To your point about these stories... Ultimately, I don't think we're ever going to know what the truth is unless Rogue One bombs. And if Rogue One bombs in the same way, and I think back to some of the movie previews of a couple of years ago, remember the disaster that the Fantastic Four film was?
Yeah.
And the director got replaced and he was tweeting how it was all a joke. I'm sure if Rogue One bombs, which it will not, if Rogue One was to bomb, then it all will come flooding out as people look to point the finger at each other.
Yeah, the one thing is, you know,
I'm going to say this to you. This film is going to be successful. Okay. We are never going to know.
No. Well, I mean, unless like 20 years from now, people are talking about the stuff and the industry.
Maybe.
But I don't really care. But I mean, it's sort of interesting to look at that and see what it's going to say. But in any event, all of which really takes us to this article that from The Guardian, which...
Written by Catherine Showard.
Yes. And side note for a minute that we're going to talk about what the article specifically says. But my take on The Guardian and this article, when I went looking for it, there's like a whole page of Guardian articles on Rogue One. I don't know what their business model is. We're going to have to look into that.
I'll tell you what the business model is. Rogue One is being filmed in Britain. All kinds of British people.
The Guardian does all these articles are essentially American things.
I'm not being facetious when I say this. In Britain, because of Elstree Studios and Shepperton Studios, we actually have, and you know, the James Bond movies, we have this weird affinity with Star Wars because it's always done in Britain. Remember that big hoo-ha when J.J. Abrams was doing the last one and he wasn't sure he wanted to do it in Britain because he was going to wait for his family, but it was like, hey, this is the ancestral home of the Star Wars movies. All I'm saying is The Guardian, is while it is an international, you know, media player now, it is still at its heart editorially a British production. I think there's just an extra fascination back in England about Star Wars. That's all I'm going to say. So I don't want to overplay, but again,
anyway, we'll talk about the article.
But if you're writing about Star Wars, what's going to play well in your two biggest markets, which is A, Britain, and B, America. So if you're The Guardian, I don't blame them for having a whole page of Star Wars action.
So in any event, the central thesis of the article...
Written by Catherine Showard, who we will tweet as we then hammer out. Yeah, we always do it.
Right.
We tweet people even if we're going to hammer.
Anyway, the central thesis of the article is that Disney may not want this to do too well.
Yes, according to the headline is Rogue One. Could Disney want to cap the success of Star Wars spinoff? I felt like when I saw that, I kind of felt like I was being trolled a little bit because it's such a moronic assumption to make. But I'm going to defend Catherine Showard because we're going to tweet her. Maybe if we take what we've just talked about Tony Gilroy and Gareth Edwards, and I've just made the presumption that if the movie bombs, it's all going to come out. Maybe there is some nervousness at Disney how this is going to play. So what do? You start running it out front that, we want it to do well, but we don't expect it to be as big as the last one. And therefore, it's like anything in this, you change the expectations of the marketplace.
Well, I guess so. But
do you know what I mean?
But I don't think that would...
If everyone says this movie's going to make $1 billion and it doesn't,
they're not having to put a spin... Nobody expects it to do as well as the last Star Wars movie. The last Star Wars movie is a part of the Star Wars continuum. Everybody knew it was going to be a big deal. This is going to lose some percentage of that audience. It's not going to have more. I mean, there's not more people going to go see Rogue One than the last Star Wars, right? So it's always going to be within that Venn diagram. It's inside of that group. But So I don't think they ever thought it was going to do fantastic. So I don't think they have any need to front run the story by like sort of playing down expectations.
Okay.
And all this stuff came out. I mean, the article itself, its lead off talks about they've broken all the pre-sale rates. So nowadays you can buy tickets ahead of time of the movie coming out. You know, you want to get that first weekend. You want to get, you know, a lot of these places have reserved seats now. You want to get the right theaters. You want to see it in 3D. You don't want to see it in 3D. They've sold more pre-sale tickets. I think they sold more pre-sale tickets the first weekend they were available than any of the other movies this year. Now, it's not more than last year.
Sure.
Right? They definitely not more than the Star Wars movie last year. But they're estimating based on this that it's going to do, I forget the opening weekend.
I will look at here amongst my notes. And I am shuffling my notes to prove that I have come prepared to the New Basement Studios.
Somewhere there was an opening weekend projection. I want to say 100, I think it was like 150 million.
I think it was something like it was 140 to 150, whereas...
And they're projecting a final global total of 1.4 billion, which is all underneath last year's movie. And this is third party. This isn't Disney projecting. This is third party projections of it. So, I
want to quote some people from this article. Bruce Nash, founder and publisher of box office analysis site The Numbers. One of his quotes is, core movie fans are going to go out in droves, but in order to hit the real heights, you have to answer yes to the question, is Grandma coming to see this film? Now, I jumped on this quote
right. Because
I've run with the opinion for a while, maybe in not on the show, but in conversations with you, that I do believe in the notion that Disney want to Star Warsify this film. And
yeah, they'd want it to be
in the hope that you attract that audience. Like I say, the full-on nerdo people that believe in a galaxy of far, far away, they're going to this. You're going to this. I'm going to this.
Yeah, but I think even we would be disappointed if it didn't have some of this. I mean, that's the whole point. That's what made it fun. And they're not trying to create a Bond movie series within the Star Wars franchise. It's supposed to be within the same stuff. It's just a different story.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. That's why it's interesting. I'm extremely fascinated, A, obviously, to see this movie, but to see how it's received.
Yeah.
Because I do think this is a massive... The one reason that the studio might not necessarily want to cap the success of Star Wars. I'm gonna play around with Catherine Shard's headline. Her headline says, Rogue One, could Disney want to cap the success of Star Wars spinoff? I actually believe that headline is correct, except for one word. Rogue One, could Disney want to cap the expectation of success for Star Wars spinoff? What I'm saying here is, you know, this film is a much... Everyone at Disney is looking at what happens here far more than what they happened a year ago. Because let's face it, a year ago, slam dunk. You couldn't go wrong with it. You really couldn't fail. I think now, in terms of the business investment they have made in the franchise, what happens with this film is going to be a pretty... You have no choice if you're at Disney than to take what happens with this film as some sort of predicator of what might happen with the Han Solo spinoff. Anything spinoff.
Yeah.
Sure. The next regular Star Wars movie with the same dudes in it, yeah, it's going to do great. But I think this one, this is the one that determines your long-term investment if you're Disney.
I think all of us are giving way too much credit to people of like, ooh, I really want to play it a particular way. They want the movie to make as much money as possible.
Of course
so the notion of like, we did these things to kind of rein it in. It would be weird if it did better than the Han. Like, I think they would have to assume the Han Solo movie is going to crush this one because everybody's going to say, well, now you're back. I mean, the Han Solo one is much closer to being within the line of the actual movies because, and plus everybody loves Han Solo. I mean, nobody knows any of these characters at all.
That's true, but no one knows. I don't know. That Han Solo movie, that we're going to spend
The Han
much
Solo
time,
movie will be like, there's a much greater chance of a backlash. And you know, you could get that on this one. I mean, like, here's the thing, and we're going to talk about this some in the Westworld context, but the way the critical media, and I'm not talking about your movie reviewers in your local paper. I'm just talking about the internet, the Twitter, the social media elements of this stuff. Nobody gets any views unless you hammer something a little bit.
Oh, people are going
to. So, like, people are going to find an excuse to like, to come after this but one. Who cares?
Yeah.
It'll still make a ton of money. I look at all the people put the boot in on Suicide Squad and it made a buck anyway, right?
Yeah, so it's interesting. You've already bought your tickets, right?
Yeah. Well, we've got the in-laws coming to town for the holidays and we wanted to make sure we could see it on that weekend right before Christmas, or actually Christmas on Sunday, so before the...
Oh, wow. So you're going to see it first weekend?
When does it open? Next Thursday? Like the 18th or something like that? I guess we're seeing it on... I think we're seeing it on the either Friday evening or Saturday. If
it officially opens
on
Friday, that means that you're probably going to be able to get to see it Monday night at 1 in the morning or something ridiculous.
No, that's what we already have our tickets for, whatever it is. And I can't remember if we're going out to like the Air and Space place, or if it's at a local theater.
Are you doing
Hopefully, we have reserve seats.
Are you doing it 3D?
The other member of the household did the purchasing.
Is this in 3D?
Apparently, we are seeing. Yeah, we are seeing it in 3D.
I don't do that myself.
And the in-laws were fired up on the 3D, and I was like, that's kind of surprising. But I was like, okay,
I'm
probably going to see it more than once.
Is it because of their generation?
Well, they're just not that. They haven't been into any other 3D.
Because I'm not going to lie to you. I'm of an indeterminate middle age, and I don't like mucking about with that 3D.
Yeah.
I don't be wearing all kinds of cheesy glasses that some other fella's been wearing and all that. I don't mind
the 3D part. It's just that the movies always seem like worse lit. Like they're not, like the picture itself seems to be dulled a bit by the process,
I kind of don't like.
Anyway, so I'm fired up on it. Are you fired up on it? Are you going to, I mean, you're going to see it, obviously, but are you going to see it with the family?
I don't know. I'll have to decide. They'll have to decide. Yeah, and if I've got to spend too long explaining it to them, then I'm going on my own. And I mean that as a throwaway line, but I actually also mean that seriously. This comes back to the essence of Rogue One. Other people, if you're explaining this to someone else, is it enough to just go Star Wars and they're in? And that's what I'm saying. This is sort of that litmus test of what is the brand worth?
I mean, that's the question. Like, people are sort of saying, is there more that's going to be linked into the things? Like I mentioned, got the Darth Vader. That wasn't in the original preview. I think they added that in.
No, he's a late.
They got the guy from Leia's. And then there were some hints in the news that maybe there would be an appearance of somebody playing a young Leia. Then there's something about Obi-Wan, but I think it was also because Ewan McGregor was kind of angling for his own spin-off movie, where he was basically saying, hey, as long as we're doing this, I spent all that time between the originals, meaning my character, and when Luke finds me as Alec Guinness, I must have done something during that time frame. How about a movie on that?
I think what he's saying is, I gave up a big wad of my career to stand in front of a green scheme and play in three movies that all people do now is dump on.
Yeah.
I want my end of it.
He looks so plastic in that movie, too. It just killed me. He looked like an action figure or something like that.
To answer your question, I think I am curious and I am excited. And I will say this about Rogue One. Unlike the last Star Wars, it actually has the potential to get me really jazzed up about it as a film.
Yeah. All right, listen, if it stands on its own, it'll be very cool.
And again, I don't want to rehash old ground. I enjoyed the last Star Wars.
There's not supposed to be any Force, although that guy mentions the Force, but I don't think there's any Force stuff.
But what I mean is I don't have a problem with any of that, but I like the fact that it's doing something different. I like the fact that it's a whole new bunch of people. It's not relying on these stock characters who, to be frank with you, I've kind of lost interest in a little bit. I ain't that interested about Luke Skywalker. I'm more interested in the last Star Wars movie. I was interested with the girl, the guy, the pilot, the other dude. They hold interest for me. But just going back to the world with these Skywalker people again, you're telling me in a universe that massive, everything just resolves around those two idiots? You must be joking.
Yeah, well, that's
this movie has very little. This movie has very little Skywalker. I'm excited to see the vision of a universe a long way away without those two Muppets and their family problems continually leaking about.
Yeah,
that's my position.
I'll buy that.
Thank you.
Anything else we forgot to talk about there? I could talk more about the plot things, but I'll let
Let's wait until we've gone to see it. Yeah, we don't want to do too many spoilers there because now we're going to turn to that's the big movie event coming up. We're now going to spend some time talking about the big TV event, Stranger Things. That's just finished, and there probably will be spoilers. So I'm just warning you now.
What we're going to try to do is backload them because I think we're going to talk a little bit about the.
I'm just going to let it all come out.
We'll save the talk about what actually happened in the episodes till the bottom third, and we'll give people a warning.
Can I say this, though? As someone who went for years without HBO and was continually behind the curve, now that I have access to HBO...
Yeah, you just don't care about anybody.
Forget that. No one cared about... Yes, I am. I've been liberated.
Yeah.
No one cared about me telling me what happened in The Sopranos. Now I'm not going to care about you all if you haven't forked out for HBO and Westworld.
All right. So... The original series Westworld, based on the Michael Crichton thing. It was...
We did talk about it in the show a couple of weeks ago, but we didn't really get too deep into it.
Indeterminate future.
Yep.
Unlike being an indeterminate middle age, so indeterminate middle future. The idea is that it's this fictional world of robots, a Wild West scene. People go there for vacation and they shoot them up,
shoot mess around with robots.
This is, by the way, not a all ages show. So you
that's should HBO, be an adult man.
To watch it.
Yeah.
So 10 episodes. I think a couple of them are over an hour. So
can I interject?
Called 11 hours worth of stuff. And it's not coming back again until 2018.
I think the game plan is front half of 2018 is
so
what they're hoping for.
If you have not seen it, you could get you got a lot of time between now and then to watch it, and you could probably get HBO for 1 month, just watch it and dump it. Maybe you could borrow an HBO Go password from your friend or something like that, and then just watch them all real quick and then get off.
I would watch it on it. Don't wait for it to show up on Sci-Fi or something like that out of it. Because as much as I love The Sopranos, I can still... Have you ever seen The Sopranos when it's on like sort of basic cable, so there are adverts and they've bleeped out stuff? I mean, this dead straight. You can watch it in that form. It's still a brilliant show. That being said, it's nice to watch it in its cable form with swearing and nudity.
Yeah.
And so Westworld...
Well, some parts of Westworld were like, that was totally unnecessary.
Very gratuitous.
That last episode, they had a couple of things where it was like, what? But why do we have to go through that to have things going on? So
it came to
stars were for Anthony Hopkins was the main star. Also had Ed Harris.
Jeffrey Wright,
who... he's been a lot of things.
A great actor, isn't he?
He was in
Felix Leiter in James Bond. He was in a great movie with Bill Murray that we'll talk about in our Bill Murray special. He was in Syriana he doesn't have any scenes with George Clooney, but he's in George Clooney. He's the lawyer.
He's in the series with Jennifer Lawrence.
Hunger Games. Don't watch them.
Yeah.
No.
You still know he's in it without having watched them.
But I mean, he's got
Evan Rachel Wood is the female lead. Oh, and Thandi Newton. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Is it Tandy or Thandi?
It's Thandi to us.
Thandi.
You got an H in there, it's Thandi.
I think she's English too, isn't she?
Yeah, she is. And if you have a TH name and you call yourself Tandy, you're just showing off. She's Thandi Newton.
That's a lot of showing off in this.
Yes.
Acting was excellent, I thought. There's a couple of characters who aren't that much, but I think that's the way they were written.
Maybe we're nearly where we need to start. I'd heard different numbers thrown around for how much this TV series was going to cost HBO. You might have a better answer to that than I. But when you have the likes of...
Yeah, they had all reshoots and stuff. That was the big talk.
No, but still, when you have... That cast alone is not coming cheap. This TV series... And maybe that's why I had that Freudian slip. It looks like a movie that you're watching on the TV TV screen.
We watched the last few episodes on our bigger TV.
I don't want to give great credit now to Teat. You know, I think about 10 years ago, TV passed that threshold where it just looked like everything else that you played on your TV, meaning DVDs and Blu-rays. Whereas when I was a kid, and no doubt for you, TV looked like TV. The sets looked cheesy. The quality of the video film looked cheesy. There was always a real noticeable difference when they were in a studio and outside a studio. If you grew up in
$100 million to make.
If you grew up in England in the '70s and you were watching a TV show, it was very clear when they were in a studio and then when they were on location.
Yeah, that's like especially.
I understand that, but what I mean is TV over the last 10 years has dumped all of that. The line between shows that never leave the studio but act like they do, or shows that even the quality of special effects on shows are vastly, and I understand that the technology has made it easier for things to look great, but you watch a show like Westworld, if it costs that money, I'm getting a cinema experience in terms of my spectacle and, to your original point, the quality of the cast.
Yeah. I don't know how many of those folks are going to be back. There are a number of people who
but we're heading into spoilers because I think most of them are coming back.
I could tell you who's not coming back. There's a couple that aren't coming back for sure. But let me just see if there's can't find my...
All right, spoiler alert is on, because we can't have this conversation without now referencing people. And if we're going to talk about who's not coming back, then...
We can get around to who's coming back in a minute. But there's definitely some not coming back people. Some people, because their plot lines are done. The big thing about it is it's got its own arc. Remember, so by the way, this is done by some people who are associated with Lost.
Yes.
And although they're not the...
And I think this is the interesting thing. This is actually the thing that gives me pause about it. In a strange way, when the finale ended the other night, you could make a case for, well, I've had all my questions answered. And I think the challenge for any series is, where do you go next? But I think... because series one is actually quite... you could watch it in isolation and you have a finished story. Sure, there are some characters where you could go, oh, I want to know what happens to him, or where's she going to go next, or this type of thing. But I think...
well, this is the other reason it's got a year off, because, you know, they filmed it not knowing if they're going to get more seasons. So it's got its own cohesive arc. It's not... while they have... I think once they knew they were going to get more time, they could open up things. But it was also... could have been very easily tweaked to just close at this point.
Yeah, and they did. It was quite... They brought it to a close that would satisfy an audience if, in fact, they knew up front, this is it.
Right. Yeah, like if you knew that was Daniel, ooh, that's interesting. Wow, that's what happened. You could tell there'd
be other stories, but it didn't... and then you make your own assumptions as to what you just
see. It didn't require resolution of some other parts here. So, you know, as a result, I think that they need the time to do the next series. Sure. I mean, like, that's the other part of it. And I guess it's offset with The Leftovers now will be back in this year.
Well, and here's the other thing.
There's a bunch of people comparing to anybody who watched Leftovers, which is going to be far less than Westworld. But I did watch The Leftovers.
Well, I want to shout
out. The first season was the book, and then it was over.
Okay.
And the second season, they had separate... I'm making this little motion like two humps. And okay. Two separate arcs here. So, just so people know.
The aforementioned J.J. Abrams is one of the executive producers, along with Jonathan Nolan, brother of Christopher Nolan, and his wife Lisa Joy, who've both themselves been involved in different TV shows, Person of Interest, and she was involved in something else quite big as well, but I can't remember what it was. One of the other reasons that they've said that they're going to wait until 2018, and I listened to and we'll shout these guys out as well. I think there's a website called Vulture. They had a podcast about Westworld today, which I heard this interview on. I'm going to hammer those guys a little bit, because the front half of that podcast was two critics hammering the show, and then they had the nerve to have on the creators of the show in the second half. I thought it was a slightly uncomfortable yin and yang. What they said was they need the time, because unlike a regular TV show where you are writing and filming at the same time, like, while you're filming one episode, you're writing the one two down the line, and you're also preparing the next one, because that's how long a TV series here of 20 in America of 20 odd episodes lasts. You know, it's supposed to last 6 or 7 months. It's a very different process. What they want to do with this one is what they do with Game of Thrones, which is write it completely and then film it all at once.
Yeah, but Game of Thrones is totally different, because there were books. Like, they are
No. But what I mean is, they want every script finished. Episode 1 to episode 10, all done, and then you go and film the whole thing. Whereas what I'm saying is, on a regular TV show, while you're filming episode 1, another guy's working on episode 2, and everyone meets to code. So what I'm saying is, it's a slightly different process. So what I mean is, in terms of a storytelling narrative, they want it to be like a film. Here's your story, now we'll go and film it. Which, again, is different from regular TV, which sort of shows this notion of the movification. Yeah. Off TV.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm looking at my notes trying to remember what else I want to talk about before we start spoiling things.
It's apparently like HBO's second highest rated debut season. I think only behind Game of Thrones in terms of what they believe total viewership might be on an episodic and streaming basis. When they total all the numbers up, it's huge and it's bigger than their expectations, because it is now near the Game of Thrones, which in a strange way, while I don't watch it, has replaced The Sopranos as sort of HBO's sort of banner.
Tentpole kind of thing.
Tentpole thing, because it just makes so much
money. So I know the other thing you're talking about, we're talking plot, is just it's cultural reception. So one of the things that people have said about this show, and I think it's right, is they are so consciously setting it up for people to comment about, do podcast about, do this stuff.
Yes.
Huge place. Reddit. Anybody doesn't know what Reddit is, Reddit are basically public message boards that have become the de facto place for if you want to know something and people who know about it are going to be there talking. You go to Reddit. It's got lots of weird parts on Reddit, but it's also just got regular things about TV shows. And that's where all the discussion would go with all the theories and things like that. You remember like when Lost would go on, you might have a conversation at work about, oh, what do you think happened? Well, now everybody's doing that online. They're doing it on podcasts. They're doing it on Twitter as it's happening. You know, they're putting out these things and it is set up to be collected to that. Meanwhile, the people who are doing that are complaining about that element of it. Some of them, I mean, not all of them, although other people are saying, well, that's what makes the show better. So Andy Greenwald is on the Ringer podcast.
Okay.
He does not like the show. He often critiques it. He doesn't like robots. That's his problem, whatever. He likes film noir detective stories that don't make
any
sense.
I'm with him on the robots thing, but we'll come to that.
But every time he talks to people, he says, it's much more interesting when you guys talk to me about it, like all your theories and stuff like that. And that's the point. I mean, you know, they know this.
Oh.
You know, they wrote to these things. It's funny because it's obviously much more sophisticated. So we talked about this before because
it's self-aware,
we're get back
isn't
at this artificial intelligence. It's very self-aware. It was much more intelligent than like Lost was a little like hocus pocus, like, oh, there's a magic smoke monster or whatever. This one, there's no magic in this one. But it was also in many ways easier to figure out. And I think that's because they plotted it out more tightly.
Well, I want to say this to your point. Some there's always that phrase about shows that they become water cooler conversation. But there is the cynic in me that believes that Westworld was written in such a way to become water cooler conversation. The fact that this first season was not completely linear, was asked questions that it didn't answer for 3 weeks, threw all kinds of Easter eggs at you. It was a jigsaw puzzle. There's that experience to it, which therefore forces people, as you say, to now talk about it around the water cooler or on Reddit, which is the new water cooler.
Yeah, right.
And so
nobody wants to talk to people they actually work with. And they all work from home anyhow, so you got to get onto Reddit to have the conversation.
There is something, like I say, slightly cynical, maybe, is the word, but it's very clever.
It's a new art form. Like a bunch of people who like, this is not us, but a bunch of people are into video gaming, and they commented about the fact that a bunch of it is very, very video gamey in the sense of like these role playing things.
Yes.
And it's like people having in their venture. I mean, like the plot is that way. And then watching the TV show. And we were, to some extent, we're repeating some things that we talked about before. But, you know, it's all about.
Here's the interesting
thing. It's like where the whole exercise of watching the show is meta for the idea of watching a show.
Well, I wanted to pick up
for what's in the show.
I wanted to expand on a point you just made that I've noticed in the last 3 days since the finale. And I suddenly decided once the finale was done, I wanted to watch it that night because there was no way. I wanted to have that first experience of it. I've noticed since then, I've had a tab up on my computer for 3 days just giving me whatever websites, not Reddit, but whatever, you know, the latest,
like gone to Google. Search,
and I've noticed, and I've heard a lot of things and different podcasts. Everyone is now, to what you said earlier, everyone who tried to puzzle it together is now complaining that they got it right.
Yeah.
And somehow that's the series' fault that you figured it out. But it's interesting that in the, I think the show was built for you to figure it out.
Yeah, I do think people figured out. I think now we're going to get into spoilers. We've been on for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So we get into, but I think people. So if you really want to save it up,
now.
You stop now because we won't be talking about anything important after this anyway.
Yeah.
Other than this part, but come back to it. Save it. Bookmark this spot, and you can come back to it once you've watched some.
Listen to the whole show again because our shows are great in their entirety.
Right.
They're arcs.
I think they were somewhat surprised by the amount people figured out. I mean, I do think they meant it for you to figure out, but they didn't realize how you get you crowdsourced the reviews and the figuring out and a bunch of the things, although I had instincts about Bernard, right? So Bernard turns out to be a robot. I have pretty decent instincts about that to start, but that was like figured out the minute it came out. Like a bunch of people said this and they're like, oh, it's the multiple timelines. Like they clearly buried the multiple timelines.
This is the trouble with the internet.
That's not trouble.
On a show where the hook is you're either a robot or you're not, Any fool can sit in his restaurant, can sit in his front room the first episode and shout, he's a robot. Oh, I'm right. If you call everyone a robot and two of them turn out to be a robot.
Nobody called everybody robot.
You're right.
There were a bunch of clear plot signs that he was a robot.
Okay,
but maybe. You were saying beforehand, what was it? The guy was talking about the three groups of watching this stuff.
Well, Jonathan Nolan himself, and again, I'm quoting his interview from this Vulture podcast with the other two TV critics who hammered it, so I'm not going to shout you guys out too much. Jonathan Nolan, so I'm now quoting another show, we've become meta.
Yeah, right, exactly.
He says that he believes, and I think he was being pretty straight-laced about it. He says there's three sorts of people that watch a show like this. There's a group of people who want to work it out in advance. Then there's a group of people who kind of don't, but they follow on, but they do want to have the payoff. They want to experience the payoff.
Right.
And again, there is some overlap between those two people, but between those two groups of people.
Well, it's the degree, right? Like, degree. I mean, like some people will go full on, they're going to be the Reddit posters. And then, some other people go, like, I'll just listen to Eric and Zeph.
And then I think semi-throwaway line is, and then there's a third group of people who are going to go home in their car and need their wife to explain it to them. But you have to understand something, and this is him.
I was about to say, what are they going home from? It's HBO. This was in the context of Memento, wasn't it?
No. This was talking about this show. But that's what he meant was there are people who after the show need someone else to explain it to them. But his point was when you make a TV show, you both have to make it for everyone, and you can't get too hung up on the needs of any one group.
Right.
And to go back, he you mentioned Memento, which he'd done with his brother. If you've ever seen that film is all over the place. Yeah. I still don't quite follow it now, and I love watching it.
Yeah.
But he said when they first took it to a movie executive said, well, this is a great film, but we can't do anything with it. And they were like, why? And they're like, well, the audience are never going to get it. And he said at that moment, he took a position that you never underestimate your audience. And so Westworld, to my point, it has delivered on those three areas. If you wanted a payoff, which I was one,
yeah,
I got it. But I also had a chance in previous episodes to throw some stuff at the wall. Oh, I think this is this, and I think that is that. And then ultimately, I'm sure there are some people at the end, probably my dear old mother, who still don't quite know what's going on. But you know something? That's fine. But you can't turn it back on the show that if you're one of those three people and you're let down somehow, that it's the show's fault. No, I know.
Well, but this goes to the industry that comes around it. Nobody wants to hear a hot take that's like, hey, this is great. They all want to hear like your critique of it.
Right.
You know, which is weird because I will say like back during Lost when Doc Jensen came out, his whole thing was like spinning it out further. Like he was taking the plots. He was talking about, oh, it relates to this book and here's how it fits. And he made it more grand. He didn't like undercut it, but it's so much easier to undercut it for people to critique what's going on there. And hey, listen, the show had things to critique, but I could critique any show. I could talk about the flaws in it. And
I
think it was an adventurous thing for them to do, and it got onto some topics that I liked.
And I want to say this about the way it was made. There aren't many other TV shows. Like I say, if you take an attitude that it's a jigsaw puzzle, no one buys a jigsaw puzzle because you like the picture at the end. You buy a jigsaw puzzle because you want the act of putting the puzzle together.
I like that.
Do you like that, don't you?
Yeah.
Right? And my point is, but there are some people who buy a picture. They buy a picture. They don't buy the jigsaw puzzle version of it because they want the picture. I believe that Westworld...
Had you heard that from somewhere else
before? No, I made that up. That's all mine. And that's going in the best of, and I'm claiming it.
Right.
But my point is, Westworld did exist on a level that if you wanted to sort of figure it out, well, they give it to you there. But then you can't blame them when you figure it out before everyone else, which is what many people have done.
Yeah. Then but it's basically, you know what it was? Continue your jigsaw puzzle. It's somebody who bought the 500 piece jigsaw puzzle and then realized it was too easy compared to the one.
And then
ones
goes,
they did.
This jigsaw
like,
sucks.
Yeah, it was a horrible jigsaw puzzle because I figured out. They're all different. You know, there's different levels of it.
And it's interesting.
Plus, if you did it on Reddit with all the friends' help, like, you know, if 20 of you do a jigsaw puzzle, it's done in 5 minutes.
Exactly. And I think that was
here, you get that corner. I'll get this corner.
Westworld kind of, in a strange way, it set itself up for its own. For, not demise is the wrong word, but for some of the
criticism,
things.
I guess.
Yeah, for its criticisms, in that it tried to be something, it wanted to engage you on a couple of different levels. Now, I do agree with people who say that, well, it's not very funny and some of the characters are a bit wooden. Although I think that's a bit unfair because it's a show about robots.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like, I'm like, you're watching a show about robots, so you can't complain that they are robotic characters. Well, even the humans are that way. And I'm like,
Critiqued, I think a lot of it was the writing for it. Like, nobody critiqued Hopkins at all. Like, people said this was great. He did some great things. You mentioned there's this whole thing about like showing how he's acting just by talking.
Brilliant. He was brilliant.
Jeffrey Wright was excellent.
Yeah. So
I think Ed Harris is pretty damn good. What's his name? Jimmy Simpson played the young version of Ed Harris.
I heard someone criticize the show. I think it was on this show where they were criticizing the fact that, you know, even Breaking Bad and The Sopranos could be funny. You know, there were episodes where you were just laughing. And I'm sitting there going, okay, that's a true statement. But Westworld isn't trying to be one of those shows. In the same way, I'm currently watching True Detective. Finally, at last.
From the original, obviously, the second series.
And I'm not sitting here complaining it's not funny enough. I'm fascinated with it. Yeah. But then it's not supposed to be a... You know, I'm saying, I've noticed this week that now it's been done and it's clearly been a success. There's a whole load of people coming out of the woodwork and kicking it around a little bit.
I will say,
on a slightly unfair level.
You talk about the infinite number of monkeys can write Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Well, if you throw an infinite number of critics at a movie, you'll get a lot of bad, like critiques, true. Like, you know, that's or true. TV show, you know, you're going to get a bunch of dead. This doesn't mean like people up there. You listen on that podcast. There's a lot of people who complimented, meaning on the Ringer one. They're always like saying, hey, this is pretty good. I like this stuff. But
let's go to the show.
Yeah, let's talk about the specifics here. So one of the main things I wanted to talk about, because we talked about it in the artificial intelligence episode where, and this is Greenwald, one of his critiques was, oh, they're robots, so I don't care. And this sort of led me into a philosophical question of, well, you know, what's a person? What's a character? What's the unit in our society? What difference does it make if it was a robot or not a robot, if everybody reacts to it just like it was a person,
okay,
and it interacts in a way? Isn't it as equally an interesting character? And my thought was, yes, it is. That was my take. So that's what I was saying before.
Okay.
But the thing that developed over the course of this that I had not thought about, which is really, I think it's a difficult thing to wrestle with in terms of the show, but it's also, like, I think a philosophical question. I'm going to get real deep into things.
Because you know where I'm coming next.
The robot operates on programming, and as we found over the course of this series, they could change it. And not only could they change it, but other people could change it, or there would be different variations on their behavior. When I talk about their programming, it's like, are they kind-hearted or are they vengeful? Okay. Are they smart or are they dumb? Are they strong or are they weak? And like literally could change these things around. Well, once you do that, now that part where I was content with interacting with them, both in terms of a show and like imagining some life when there's robots, I was content to interact with them as if they were people, because they just be like people. Well, if the underlying programming of the person, the underlying character, is inconsistent, it breaks that all up.
Ooh, okay. I see.
Like, you know, because
now,
take it in reverse order. If, in fact, we were in a future with robots, and you know how, in all these artificial intelligence things, it's about how people get attached to it. You know, like Haley Joel Osment is the little robot, and everybody gets attached to the robot. Well, if Haley Joel Osment one day...
That's the movie AI.
Was a killer... And the other day he was super sweet. Nobody would treat him that he would be treated like
a killer,
a psychotic, you know, having a multiple personality disorder that we'd have to worry about. And so now you don't have to worry about the attachment if people can change, and it requires a consistency. So suddenly my empathy, my willingness to interact with them as people is broken down because they're not behaving like people anymore. Because people change, but people don't change like that unless they have a mental illness. You can't just turn a switch and change around.
Okay.
So now, take it to the show. Well, gosh, now, if these people, these characters that you would normally grow attached to, you know, Dolores seems like a very sympathetic character, and a spoiler of all spoilers, folks, so like if you didn't take our warning before,
yeah,
she killing a bunch of people at the end there. Well, now...
Well, she doesn't. She's already been a psycho, isn't she?
Yeah, well, but we didn't. Like, it wasn't totally clear. But by the last episode, we're like, okay, there's this other version, which... by dint of her programming, she goes on a rampage, basically. Well, now, is she a sympathetic? I don't know if she's a sympathetic character anymore. And even to a lesser extent, some of like Thandi Newton and those other characters where they turn their abilities up to 11.
See, this is why
the scale is larger. And they go, well, wait a minute. Now, like, am I attached? Although, like, the glimmer of hope they gave us for Thandi Newton at the end was basically she... despite the fact that she knows it's all programming, she goes and acts on that, and she comes back to try to
find this part of a quote-unquote daughter. But this is part of the problem with a show being a show, in that you have to have, at a certain level, you have to have dominant characters and weaker characters. You have to have heroes and you have to have villains.
Yeah, but if they change from time to time, and that's part of my motivation.
But what I'm saying is, the show had set itself out at the start, fairly or unfairly, that it was going to show life from the point of view of the robots. And I'll be honest with you, at the end of it, when the robots are running amok, I'm like, someone needs to take control of all these robots, man.
Yeah.
I didn't want the one robot to escape. When her and her buddies are taking everyone out, I couldn't wait for some security guards to kill them. When what's her name turns into a psychotic killer, I'm like, someone needs to do something about that. So while the show may have tried to have me be sympathetic towards robots, at the end, my robot prejudice was only reinforced.
Yeah, and just to expand on that.
I didn't want the robots to escape.
They did that a little bit with the people, too.
Because they're robots.
They did that a little bit with the people.
But listen, what I'm talking about
in terms of the show is that the character who played, and I'm borrowing some things from that podcast, the Ringer podcast, but the character who played Man in Black, Ed Harris.
Yeah.
When he's now going to a banquet at the end and he's in his tuxedo, he's like a totally different person.
Yes.
Like, you know, he's this crazy cowboy with a big knife and this other thing and this other one. They basically were commenting. I'm sure this is how they shot it and stuff. He appeared smaller. He's like a little 5'5" guy.
Yeah.
Not like meaning like, oh, he's like a tiny, but he just seemed like a regular size before he was this big character. Meanwhile, you know, the other person who was playing him in a different era, that character completely changed what they were. In a way, Ford, what's his name?
Anthony Hopkins
changes too. Like, he's like, we couldn't tell. Like, earlier on, he seemed like a villain. Now he seems like a liberator.
No, he just set all the robots free. I was never not sympathetic to Anthony Hopkins. One, because he's Anthony Hopkins. Yeah. And two, he's human. And three, he's running everything.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and again, I'm being deadly serious now. I bring in my prejudice about robots. You're not getting the better of the humans. And on the show, my prejudice kicks in on the show. While I was invested in the characters, at the end of the day, my default is, yeah, you're not getting away with this. And when it looked like the robots were going to escape, I was rooting for them to be
like
stopped.
If you're saying we should all defend humankind if the robots come after us, yes. I'm with you there.
Yes.
But in terms of watching the show, I don't mind rooting for the robots.
It's Christmas time.
It's not really happening.
We're getting close to Christmas. Have you ever seen those adverts on TV for that little iRobot vacuum cleaner that you can buy? Imagine if you buy one of those. I give you one for Christmas and he cleans your house. You come home one day and he's sitting on your couch having gone through your fridge with a beer watching TV. You're going to pick up that robot and you're going to throw him into the lake next to the house because he's not doing his robot job.
But what if that robot, rather than being a little iRobot, looked like a person and for years had acted really nice to you and you interacted with?
I don't think
I want to get one of those Google Home things for Christmas, you know, like where you talk to it, but you know, I don't want to get too attached to it. Luckily it doesn't have legs and it can't move around and things like that, but you don't really know what can happen.
No, that's the thing. The show's premise is, you got two different, you know, you've got, what's West Side Story? Is it the Jets and the
Sharks?
The Sharks and the Jets. That's how it rolls. And there may be people crossing over and trying to act like the other. But at the end of the day, when the push comes to the shove, I'm rooting for Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
And I'm rooting against the robots.
Well,
and again, at the end of the show, when the robots start killing people, no one's cheering going, go robots. It appeals to the show.
I was cheering for robots.
Oh, I don't know. See, the show appeals to the.
I mean,
I was
watching the episode and I was happy to see. What did you feel bad when any of those people got killed at the end?
Yes. Oh, who, the robots or the
people? The people are getting shot.
I didn't like the robots getting in front of everyone. I wonder robots
did
to be taken
like
down.
Were you attached to any of the people in some sense that they didn't deserve this?
Well, this is the big argument about to stay on the show. The big argument about the show is, and this is where, you know, we're getting towards the end, where's it going next? And someone,
it's exactly where I want to go.
People have been going through the list of who's still going to make it. Well, if there aren't any likable human characters left, and most of the human characters that appear to be living have throughout the course of the show been relatively unlikable, well, who are we going to root for? And that's the challenge with the show.
Well, and if, and I if mean, they, I know how they could do this. I mean, at least it works for me. I don't know if it's going to work for everybody, right? So I even see, not only do I see the second season, but I see the third season already.
Oh, I see the second season.
So, I mean, the second.
And I'm going to drop. This is the biggest ball in the mall right here. No, Anthony Hopkins comes back around episode 7.
Not coming back.
Oh, he's coming. He's still alive, man.
There's no chance that Anthony Hopkins don't is sign filming him another up. Season.
No, no.
No, this is specific. It's the complete opposite.
He signed up for one. They signed him up for one because also he's old. And you don't want a situation where he's going to die mid-season and then you're really stuck. So you just re-sign him up. You think it's the people who've plotted this out have not plotted it out to the extent.
The second season is almost going to be completely unrelated to the first season in like what it's about. The second season.
So all the different characters. But HBO
the
just
robots
tried.
Robots are all
HBO
back.
Just tried that with Ed Detective. Ed Harris, and it
is,
failed.
Ed Harris is still going to be there. But Jimmy.
So now it's a robot show. It's like Planet of the Apes.
No, you know what it's like? It's Lord of the Flies. Here's what the plot is of the my prediction, the plot of the second
robots
season.
Robots versus robots.
Well, listen.
And you know something?
Think about
who
this.
Cares? Because I'm a human.
Oh, man. You don't have an expansive mind. Here's
I do.
What I'm going to say.
I have more expansive
Here's what
mind
the second
than some
season
machine.
Can be about. Like, if you take a bunch of essentially sentient, we could talk about whatever they are, but they're sentient beings at this point, these robots. They have personalities, whether that's programmed or not. They have things that they like, they have things they don't like. I know one of the things you talked about before is it doesn't make any sense that people would like things, you know, like they don't have a normal emotion, but it doesn't matter. It's programming. It's what we're all designed to like or not like.
Okay.
So now you basically say you've thrown off all of their loops and their cycles and their programming shackles, basically. And you said, okay, you're all society. Go figure it out. It's Lord of the Flies. It's basically taking people, robots, that have never had... They've never had to govern themselves. They're children.
Okay.
And they now are going to figure it out. And so they're going to be taking over the park. They're going to be... Like, some of them are going to say, we should just kill all the people. And, like, that might be left. And some of them are going to say, no, that's the way that... That's the wrong way
that's
to treat
them. That's the way people would be.
Yeah, exactly.
Aye.
We need to be better than that. This is the point, is we're going to be a higher life form. We're going to figure it out. And so, like I'm actually predicting Tandy Newton comes back and she's more sympathetic to people. Like
I liked her at first and then she started annoying me.
Yeah, I mean, it could be her, but not her. But there's some weird things that happened there in that very, very end of the episode that I didn't quite follow. But in any event, but this is what the second season could all be about. Sure. That shifting, there could be like, because the park is going to be cut off.
Yeah.
And it's going to be all about people figuring this stuff out. And remember, we've just found out there's a whole, at least one other park, if not multiple other parks all related.
This is the problem for me. I'm not interested in some, you know, some robot domestic issue. To me, and I mean this dead straight, for the show to work for 5 seasons, you cannot get too far away from your core premise that you have humans who have created robots that look like them. I'm not interested in some robot civil war. I don't care. That's a robot problem. For me, the drama comes in the clash between robot and human. Again, if I come home...
Yeah, no, I'm still... There'll still be a clash between them, but it's just going to
be... Well, not if there's no humans left. If it's just a load of robots.
No,
Planet of the Apes. Not interested.
It is like... What do you mean? Planet of the Apes had a clash between the two? The whole point was that this is... It is going to be like that, where they're going to be the more dominant side. Okay. And then you know what season 3 is, right?
Return of the Humans.
No.
So Anthony Hopkins...
They start to leave the park.
Okay.
They're going to exit the park into general... This third season's not even going to be in the park.
Have you been on Reddit? Are you throwing...
No, I'm just making these things up. This is my prediction.
No, I'm saying...
This is how you can plot it out.
Have you put your predictions on Reddit so that... You should put this on Reddit so that you can be the first in...
I'm sure somebody's already put it up. I haven't seen it, but this is what it would be.
They say they've got...
Not a lot of people watch Leftovers. I watched Leftovers. But it very much did that, where it did a season, it took its arc, and they said... We're going to use that foundation to do a whole different story.
I do think that's going to occur. I do think they're going to leave the park. They've got 50 hours of TV to fill. They've only filled 10 because apparently they've said...
Four more seasons?
They said they plotted out 5. And okay. I think HBO is sitting here going, ooh, we've got a hit on our hands and we need one. HBO would turn around going, you better make this run for 5.
Yeah. And a lot of people said Leftovers got better in the second season. I think it has the potential.
HBO only bail on things.
I mean,
when
it's just like Disney.
Really going
it's
down.
Like Disney. They know they are now at the point where they know how to fix things. Like, so with all the feedback about like all these critics and things like that, just like The Leftovers had a ton, people hated The Leftovers the first season. They come up with the second season. They said, okay, we're going to do better things with it. And that's another lost guy, by the way. That's Cuse, wasn't it?
Colin Cuse.
Yeah. Is it? Or is it Lindelof? Anyway, so somebody did, one of the two of them did The Leftovers, and he was in a dark place in the first season. The second season, he took it a whole different way, and people said the second season was better. I think HBO knows, listen, these are the parts that didn't work in the first season. Get rid of them. These parts do work. Use those, build those up, do that stuff.
And I think that's the danger for the and I think this is unfortunately the danger for the show, because to me, it was quite groundbreaking in the fact, in the way that it challenged the viewer, the way it was filmed, the way it had different timelines, the way that the editing intentionally tried to put you off.
Yeah.
I think if you come out next year and you're suddenly more linear, again, as is the case with anything, the same people who liked it are going to throw it back in your face. I know, I'll sit down. But part of the attraction for me was the fact that I was being told a story a different way. And so, perhaps unfairly, if next season comes and is telling just a more cleaner story, I'm going to sit there and be a bit fidgety because it's not the Westworld that I fell in love with. And it almost has to work all over again to pull me in. And that's also the problem.
I only plotted the general sketch.
No. But what I mean is that, yeah, every show has to go different directions to survive. And I think of The Wire that ultimately told five different stories with some crossover characters. But in a strange way, in its essence, it was quite linear. The tone was always the same. Some of the narrative things were kind of. Do you know? I know that's not a very good.
That's the stuff they learned is people want to. Keep the tone and the things that people found interesting, but come up with a new story. You don't want to replow the same ground.
All right, so exit questions. Because we're getting to the end.
Okay.
The exit questions. Yeah. So you think Anthony Hopkins is done and dusted?
Gone.
See, I don't know. I think he's coming back.
How's he going to come back? He's a person. He got shot in the head.
No, because remember, in the basement, he was building another body. That body is him. He rolled that body out because he knew they were trying to push him out. He rolled that body out to be shot. He's going to go and hide away with his fantasy home in that part of the park that Bernard said. This doesn't come up on any maps.
If they do
and
that,
then halfway through, no. Imagine
okay, he's going to appear in the last three episodes.
But that's what I'm saying. Imagine HBO sitting there going,
he doesn't want to work another season.
No, he doesn't want to work another season.
He's 78 years old, man.
But HBO are going to. He's in the next Transformers movie.
Well, I'm sure he had to appear for 2 days.
HBO was saying bring him back for the last three episodes without warning. Rings would be huge. So I guess my exit question is: were you happy with how it all finished? Are you ready for more? It sounds like you were happy. I was very happy with the end. If there was never another episode, I'd be like, wow, it was a really good TV show.
Yeah.
I am curious as to what comes next.
They do seem to have glossed over a couple of things that I couldn't follow.
Let me explain them for you.
Okay.
Hit me.
Bernard.
Yeah.
Gets popped in the head, pops himself in the head, the penultimate episode. Then the other guy comes along and just points a little thing at him, and he gets better. First of all,
You crash
that's
your
really
car.
Convenient. But that's
you crash your car into a lamppost, you take it to the body shop, it's running again.
No, but
he's a robot.
But you don't have the guy who can fix a bumper, fix the engine, because he got touched the thing. Then, when he gets together with Hopkins again, I don't even think it was... Was there even a scene where he went up to Hopkins and Hopkins was like, oh, look, you're back. It was just like they were suddenly interacting again, like they'd completely forgotten about the in-between part.
Because that is the robot Hopkins. The human Hopkins, he's been away somewhere else because he knows those dudes from the corporation. See?
And what was Tandy Newton taking on the train who she left behind?
I think that honestly, I don't know what that is. That's probably just
and the guy.
Put it this way:
guy Abernathy, who they were supposed to put on the train with all the stuff. I don't know what happened with that. I mean, I guess he might have just gone off with all the other people in cold storage.
Put it this way: the guy who was in charge of that, he's now doing props on Madam Secretary on CBS because he's not working there anymore. I think that was just a mistake.
Interesting sidelight. So one of the things is about Jimmy Simpson being the same. As Ed Harris is the same character. Apparently, Jimmy Simpson figured this out in the second episode, but nobody else on the show had. And so he had a whole discussions with them about he was supposed to be out on HBO wants them out on social media. And everybody was asking him, are you the man in black? Are you the man in black? And so he went and asked the producers. He was like, guys, what am I supposed to say? And they're like, just trying to avoid the entire topic.
See, and I want to say
this. You wonder how we figured out? So it's in an article somewhere. I forget, maybe Vanity Fair. Vanity Fair had
they've done a quick series, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, the woman who did this, she was really did nice write ups on it. So maybe go back there. Apparently, like the first couple of days, the makeup artist is like looking at him and says, "Would you mind if we like trim your eyebrows a little bit to kind of give them a little bit of a more of an arch?" And he goes, "Okay, sure. I don't care what you would do." And but he's like, thinking to himself, "Why would they care what my eyebrows look like?" And so he starts flipping through the other actors and he goes, "Oh, I bet I'm supposed to be Ed Harris."
See, Ed Harris was quoted as saying he really didn't know what else was going on.
No, I think they also filmed, like, so since he got all the backstory scenes, like he mentions picking up the can from Dolores and he's like, "Why are they filming me do this?" Whereas Ed Harris was filming a movie that, like, I'm a cowboy.
Well, but also, because like I say, they film it all at the same time.
Yeah.
That's what I did. But to say that, though, I read an interesting interview with Jeffrey.
Anthony Harris? I meant Ed Harris.
I read an interesting interview with Jeffrey Wright, who sort of said, "Yeah, in the pilot, I was kind of given a script and just told to play it."
Yeah.
Then we went away, and then when it was picked up, it was only then when I was brought in and it was explained to me that now for the rest of the series, you're going to have scenes, but you're playing two guys, so you have to make it slightly different, but no one's... And he talks about how, yeah, he was told up front, Bernard's a robot, but you're actually going to play this other guy as well, but the way we're going to cut it... So he was let in a little bit.
Because I wonder if they told him.
Well, no, they told him
you're a robot, but he didn't tell him which scenes he was a robot. Well,
no, because he was told he had to sort of bring a bit of nuance here and there. And it's interesting. I'm looking forward to watching the whole thing again once all this has died down. I've read everything I can read on the
net. Oh yeah, there'll be a whole bunch of things.
And then go back and watch it again and actually specifically look for things. And again, the people who are criticizing it for somehow letting them down, the people who wanted to know it all the way along. Well, to take it back to my jigsaw analogy, most jigsaws, you do it at one time and then you're done with it. Westworld, the jigsaw TV show, well, it's a puzzle that, shake all the pieces up. You want to do it again.
Yeah.
Because now you want to see what you might not have seen the first time. And that's quite rare in TV, for someone to make something that you want to come back to on any premise other than, well, that show was really good. Like, I like watching The Sopranos again because it was great. But there's no surprise or mystery. I'm not going to watch The Sopranos and go, "Oh, wow, Tony was always this all the way along."
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. What they've accomplished with Westworld, by any standards, they've done something quite rare. Yeah.
Well, I want to throw my own metaphor in there because I will hopefully get in the greatest hits. It's a roller coaster, right? Like, because everybody's critiquing the thing. And you get on a roller coaster, right? And you're looking for the surprises. But you know what? You know the roller coaster goes up. You know the roller coaster goes down. You know it goes different sideways. And so they're surprises, but they're not, you know, it's not like the tracks end and you fall off the end. You know, it's within a range of like surprises. And so when people are criticizing and saying, "Oh, you know, I knew it was going to turn that way. I figured out it was turning this way." So what? It was still a roller coaster.
It's a roller coaster
like that. Yeah. And to use your analogy of the second time, you know what? The second time on the roller coaster is not too bad either. You might even enjoy some parts more because, you know, that's where we do the loop. I'm looking forward to that loop coming up. I'm going to do a loop. But there's other parts where we go, whatever.
For me, I'll have my eyes open on the loop.
Exactly.
You know, but it's true. That's right. So there you go.
Not as good as the jigsaw one, but we'll
get back there. But still.
All right. So hopefully we come up with a plot for the Christmas episode.
Up with something. There's a few ideas knocking around.
Yeah, there may be a mishmash of different things.
But yeah.
But if you want to, I should say, like, if people listen to this and they do want to get in the early Christmas spirit, we should put up some links to the old episodes because this is the problem why we can't do them. For people who might be only listening to this recently, we did whole episodes on Christmas movies, Christmas songs, you know, Christmas foods, all these sort of things. And we should put up, maybe we could put a...
This week I'm going to put this
tweet
week
it or blog it.
This
or
week
something.
I'm, yeah, I'll tweet it, blog it, Facebook it. I'll put it on the post, or I might even do an excuse for a quick show, because most people get it.
Yeah, you can repost them.
But what I'm saying is most people get this show via iTunes.
Right. So you just repost them in the feed.
Don't worry about it. Don't you worry about it, my friend. I'll take care of it.
We'll see about that.
Nothing else for this week. Christmas special coming soon. This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at atlanticvoice.net. Email us at atlanticvoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.